You guys are listening to Tech at TV podcasting series. In our show, we bring you the best in technologies, innovation, startups, fintech, artificial intelligence, cloud computing, and the latest and the greatest in technology worldwide. Good evening, good morning, good afternoon. You guys are listening to Tech at TV podcast. In our last episode, we had Dr. Han, and he agreed to continue for another podcast today. So we have like a very cool innovator here, an expert in this field, in this area, and he runs the Sandbox and FAU for those who don't know. Florida Atlantic University has an artificial intelligence program, has an artificial intelligence lab, and he agreed to come here with Matt Trask, one of our friends from Boca Raton here. So how are you, Dr. Han?
Very good. Thank you for having us on the show.
Great. So I love the podcast we had before. It was pretty interesting, especially when we were discussing all kinds of new features and what happened. And I think we left off where we were saying that 1% of the population, or less than 1% right now, has exposure to AI potentially, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's like what people say about Bitcoin, like, or cryptocurrencies. It's like, oh, it's like saturated. Well, I mean, if you talk to 99 people, maybe one knows what it is. Even maybe one person has a wallet out of 100. So, and then you're correlating that to the internet in 1999, when like maybe at university level, people know what the internet was. They had an email, and you will tell someone on the street, hey, the World Wide Web. It's like, the World Wide What? It's like a email. It's like, no, come on. So then, where do you see the artificial intelligence research in your lab, right? Coming right now, where are the cool projects that you can share with us? And then, number one, and let's just start there. What cool project do you have?
Yeah, well first, it, like you said, it's kind of like the internet. You know, 25 years ago, this internet thing was brand new in the world. And the library was one of the first places you could go that had it set up. They had a keyboard you could get your hands on, and you could go and try this internet thing out. And that's really the purpose of the space that we built at FAU. We call the AI Sandbox. It's an environment where you can go and try AI. AI is as new as the internet was in the 90s, but it's going to affect everybody and everything, just like the internet does now.
And it's open to the public. It's open to FAU students. What's the situation in the Sandbox?
So it's open to the public. We're open whenever the library is open. You can just wave at the front and then they'll let you in. And we think of this as a community and a student-driven space. And so we've got a whole bunch of different groups that are working in a bunch of different areas. And what we try to do, we have a trick question when students come in the lab. We ask and we say, what is your major? And no matter what they reply, we just say, perfect. Because we really believe that, like email, you know, in 95, everybody is going to need AI now. So if you want to do pre-med, you have to be aware of AI. If you want to do pre-law, you have to be aware of AI. If you're going to go into business and you don't know about AI, you know, best of luck to you. You know, I think that's the kind of thing that we want to expose as many students as we can. And at the same time, there's all this amazing talent and community in the area, like some of the stuff that Matt's working on with the tech farm and what you have here with the incubator. This is extraordinary. And so the purpose of the space is to bring all of these folks together.
And I think I went one time to see when your presentation, you have the dog, the famous dog. Why is everybody so attracted to that dog? And like, what's going on there? What's the deal?
Well, the answer to that is simple. Robots are cool.
No, but like, okay, yeah, you're cool. But like, what's the purpose in the Sandbox area? What kind of things they do as students or engineers or researchers?
So actually the name of the lab, you know, the space is called the Sandbox. The lab is called Machine Perception and Cognitive Robotics, the MPCR lab. So my role in the lab is on the robotics side. I'm an engineer. Most everybody else are scientists. Not everybody, of course. But as an example of something that we do for the public, every Monday I run a public meetup event from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. where people come in and hang out and learn how to do ROS robotics, ROS's robot operating system. I have a couple of very large robots in there that are too complex for beginners that we're just starting to dig into. But we have a number of small robots. Dr. Han got me a TurtleBot 3 for the group a year ago. And recently we had a donor bought us a TurtleBot 4. So we have people at various levels of robotics ability, but they come every week on Monday to get better at this, participate in other things in the lab as well.
That's what's just amazing is there's all this, you know, hands-on equipment. You can imagine a few decades ago, if you even wanted to see a robot, you had to go to Motor City, you had to go down to the assembly line in the cars, and you had to stand behind a metal cage and watch the thing shoot sparks or whatever. And it wasn't something you could play with. And now these robots, like Matt's saying, you can hand them off to a student and say, make this thing go.
And what's the main, I will say, path for the general public right now to learn AI? Where do you, if I am a student, I don't have access to the sandbox, I'm maybe away, what will be your first thing? Like, okay, besides YouTube, okay, watch that, but like, what will be the thing that you will order? Or how will you connect?
Yeah, if you're interested in the hands-on, there's a couple routes to go. We recommend, you know, getting involved in the little hardware, like Matt was saying, the edge hardware. And okay. There's a bunch of those right now. There's a new Raspberry Pi called the Pico, and it has a wireless built in, and that just came out. And you can get these little mini computers for around $15 or something like that. And this is the kind of computer that would have been a few thousand dollars in the 80s. And it's a perfect opportunity because you can hand it to a student, you know, for the price of a snacks and cookies or something like that. And yet they get a real machine and they can start doing this code. And I think having the code interact with the edge and do real things, whether it's just blink a light bulb or run a little speaker, it's very compelling to see it now. Oh, it's alive. It's doing something. It's answering a question about the world. It's looking through its camera. And when it sees a person not wearing a hard hat safety helmet, it puts on the red light. And so you can see it as a helper.
And for this diffusion generation models, it's like you recommend people just to go to one website.
Oh, there's a bunch of these. So there's crayon.com. It was spelled AI in the crayon. There's one called Dream Studio, which is really a lot of fun. There's the DALL-E generator, but that one you have to register to get access. But I recommend they just, you know, search. There's tons of these things every day. Maybe they can put them in your comments when you post this online, because there's always a new one. OpenAI has something called the Jukebox, and this is really neat. You can listen to new Frank Sinatra and Ella Fitzgerald and all this kind of stuff, and it'll compose new music for you. There's a really fun one called GoGAN, which NVIDIA puts out, and that one you can sort of just doodle, sort of finger paint style, and then it'll turn it into an amazing piece of artwork for you.
So basically, like the public can just go to all those different ways. I'm going to put them on the screen here so they can, like, you can click on that. And what's your favorite?
Oh, they're different. That's what's so interesting. Kind of like this prompt generation you were talking about. Some of them are really good at generating like oil paintings and artwork. The others are very creative. You can say, give me a cat with a polka dot hat riding a zebra on the moon or whatever. And it'll do and do all of those different things. It's really extraordinary.
And for those that are trying to get into the business side of the story, you said business world, right? And then they want to start an AI company. What would you say is a good sector that they can get in, and how can they get into the AI? We have a lot of startup entrepreneurs here, but in your opinion, what would be the AI growth area of progress right now?
They say if you can answer a question in less than 1 second, that question is probably ripe to get an AI to answer. So the current AI systems, they can't deliberate. They can't really sort of chew and consider on the ideas, but they can make a very quick decision. Like, do I see a remote control on this table? Yes or no? And I can answer that question in 1 second or so. So I think people need to look around their business and their opportunity and say, what are the questions that I answer on my daily basis that take less than 1 second? And maybe it's looking at my warehouse to see if all the boxes are stacked. Maybe it's looking at my parking lot to see if the cars are full. Maybe it's checking an email to see if it's spam. Maybe it's answering a quick phone call to see if it's an important phone call. You know, you can, within 1 second, you know if it's an important phone call, for example. And so if it's in that under second range, you can probably tackle it with AI.
So we can say the 1 second rule for...
Exactly.
For AI startups.
I like that. Yeah.
That makes total sense. But like, do you, Dr. Han, do you have any like startups of your own? Do you have any ventures that you want to like tell us, or is all secret?
Yeah, a couple of them are still a little bit in stealth mode, but we've got basically the project that we're excited about in the lab is like the stuff that Matt's talking about. Taking these robots, Matt's got a collection of these amazing robots that are about my height and, you know, can drive around. And you know, we're putting now onto these things the ability, these conversation generators. And so some of these AI that are now stuck on your laptop, for example, they can talk to you about, let's say, sporting events, or they can talk about the latest news, or what's the best way to evacuate South Florida during a hurricane, or where's the best place to park my car during a football game. And to take that conversation ability and put it into the bots that Matt's working on takes it to a whole other level. Because now that bot can help me back to my dorm room if I'm lost, or maybe it can show me where the graduation ceremony is. It just becomes a helper and brings it out into the real world. And just like the internet came into our hands with smartphones, and then suddenly the internet was 100 times more useful than it was before.
Right, right.
I think the same thing is going to happen when we get these ideas mobile.
So any of these mobile AI robot or robotic tools that you're, have you seen the Coco? The delivery robot that's in Austin is a company.
I've seen a couple of them. I don't know if I've seen the Coco one.
The company is called it slipped my mind, but the brand Coco is the one that is in Austin,
uh-huh.
And it's in Austin, it's in Purdue University, it's in all the different university campuses. But it's a little bit of a cheat because the AI helps the driver, because it actually has a driver remote that is driving the Coco and kind of helps the driver identify obstacles, but it's not 100% AI yet.
I'm a big fan of that kind of model though. You know, I think the hybrid solution is really probably going to be the most powerful. And in terms of the business folks out there, I'd recommend they consider that kind of strategy. Rather than thinking, do I replace this employee with this algorithm, think, how much more value can this employee generate for the organization if they have this, you know, superhero cape? So I like to think of the AI as sort of, you know, magic glasses, magic ears, magic cape that allows humans to do things. I'm not quite interested in the runaway, AI economy. I want to make sure that these things serve human needs.
And how about like the whole Uber and then like the Chinese company that was called that does like automated drivers, and then they bring the cars, the driverless car. So are you like, what do you think? Is that still dangerous or?
Oh yeah, I don't quite trust. I don't quite trust those.
And he's a PhD in AI.
Yeah, so I know too much about the debugging of them. keep them on manual mode for now. But I don't think it's that far away. I think we are going to see sort of an internet of transport emerge over the next 15, 20 years.
So that could be another area of innovation, the internet of transport, mobile robotics, text. And how about like the ethics of deep fake? Are you guys doing any research on deep fake and in your sandbox lab?
Yeah, so Matt's son is at a national lab and doing some stuff like this. And then we just have a student who just graduated. He's at the other national lab. And that's what they're doing there. So this is a concern of the nation at the national scale, basically at the national security level even. And we were talking with him and we were saying he has to get a top secret clearance for this to even work on this.
Wow.
Because we're going to start to see audio and video that, how will you know it's real? How will you know it's real? And I think we're going to need things like blockchain. I think we're going to have to use this kind of technology from the encryption world to verify that this podcast was genuine. This isn't like an artificial version of William or something like that.
Actually,
are you real?
You have to buy the NFT to find out.
One of our high school students, so we have a bunch of smart kids at FAU High School.
Yeah.
One of them recently showed us a demo where he took a photograph of himself and loaded it into an AI. And then he writes a paragraph of text, feeds it to the program, and it animates the still photograph of him. It moves his lips and makes facial expressions out of his photograph. And it reads the words to you in a voice that sounds like, you know, doesn't sound just like him, but it sounds like a voice, not like a mechanical voice. And you could make anybody say anything. And this is not even really deep fakes, you know, this is just kind of a trivial, almost a toy that he's working with.
The reason why I'm saying it is because in this podcast, I have another podcast with Dan Gudima, you know that. And then we bring bots. So, but the bots have like, we already know what they're going to say. So you're just going to play them and just text to speech kind of thing. But I've been thinking is like, you know, in real life, you can have like a co-host that is an AI, actually.
There's an idea. It's going to be wild, you know, for students and stuff like that. I had a professor who told me a story that there was another professor who would not, this was late 70s, early 80s, they would not take typewriter, or they wouldn't take word processor report. So if the student had done their report on a computer, they wouldn't accept it because this person thought that the computer had written. They would only take handwritten manuscripts or maybe a typewriter kind of thing. It's funny you say about the student generating that, because now you can do a public speaking, right? If you're terrified of public speaking, you just make a deep fake of yourself, give it the script, and then it's going to generate it for you. So now, you know, if the student turns in their homework of giving a presentation, how do you know it was actually them?
But that's what I was asking the question. It's like I have this little kid here that comes here as a intern, and then he thinks that he programs, but he does not. I studied him because I wanted, like, because if he's talented, I was okay. That's What he does is goes to YouTube all the time. And he hides in the back and he listens to the YouTube tutorial, and he goes and follows the tutorial, and then he creates some code or something. But he's a good playback, right? So that was like, look, if this kid had a little bit of AI and added to the code, then he could probably like fake it as a coder for a long time.
Absolutely. Well, it's not faking it at that point. You know, the classic script kiddie. But now with this AI superhero, so there's actually an AI chatbot essentially that has looked at all of GitHub, and it knows code so well.
I have it in my VS Studio. I was typing, and then I was like, fetch, and it will create the whole React for fetching the whole data and everything. Of course,
the boilerplate code. Yeah,
that's it. They just like, you don't have to serve GitHub anymore for fetch.
And that's someone that for me, after 20 years, I'm still have three tabs open, copying, pasting the working code. I think it's how most folks do it. And so I think this is going to be a game changer for this next generation, because they will be able to move a lot faster.
So, you know, they say now in computer science that, you know, everybody uses Stack Exchange, Stack Overflow for a resource. And say if that server ever goes down, 85% of programming will stop.
No, but at the same time, I think you have to limit that. Like, I remember when we took calculus and people had these calculators that could do integrals, and then they were forbidden for the exam, because then you don't think, right? You just like punch in like integration of x dx equals to, oh, okay, x n over 2. Oh, that's it. That's like, that's it. X n over n plus 1. That's it.
But you know, when I first learned statistics in college in the 80s, we did all this long form math. When I took statistics last year in grad program, we used SPSS and did no math. We learned all of the processes and meanings and how to interpret the data, and none of the mechanics of how to manipulate the numbers, because it's just not done that way anymore. You know, we were told, oh, you have to learn how to do math because you're not always going to have a calculator. Guess what's in my pocket connected to my camera, which is also my phone.
It's not only a calculator. You can actually enter even a simulation, a command or something. Simulate this, whatever, like. So things are going to change drastically. And then how do you see then your lab right now expanding? Are you guys under one roof at the library? Do you guys see like branching out into like an institute center? What's the vision for the sandbox?
Yeah, I mean, we really hope to grow this into a world headquarters in South Florida for this kind of research, but also for this kind of talent, to create a talent pipeline and talent pool in this area, because there's just not enough young people or just anybody in general who's even heard of essentially this revolution. And it happened relatively recently. And I think there's still an extraordinary opportunity for everybody to get involved.
Great. And how can they reach you, Dr. Han? Like, do you have your website or your lab? What's the best way to find you?
Yeah, you can find me at hahn.ai.
Okay, that's easy. And the math? How can they find you, Matt?
We have mpcrlab.com.
mpcrlab.com,
is the lab and the sandbox's website. My website is matttrask.com.
There's
nothing there worth going to see.
There's nothing there. But Dr. Han, I'm pretty sure you have all your research, or like anything that you want to recommend people to foresee in the next presentation. Do you maybe have some demos to come in the next, at the end of the year, in the fall, you always have some sort of a, I remember I went one time and you had like a demo night. Is that coming up soon?
Yeah, we're gonna plan some things like that. I think we're gonna have the robot dog out for Halloween, and so that should be fun. We'll send that link around for y'all, and everybody can come check out the robot. But yeah, we hope to have a collection of a whole bunch of evening events, you know, around these kinds of discussions. That's the main goal of our space, really, is to engage the community, have these kinds of conversations, and you know, get feedback. Because you know, as technologists, it's not just up to us where this is going to go. We need to get steering from the larger community, the larger world, because there's a lot of input we need in that front.
And I know a lot of like people that we have in our network are VCs or they have capital. And are you guys still taking like some sort of donations or some sort of grants? Or how can they connect with you and give you money?
Yeah, absolutely. So come by and come visit us in the sandbox. We'll show you what we're working on. Come see the lab. Come meet with the students, and we've always got a bunch of opportunities. And there's opportunities for the students, but also, you know, this is going to be big business. I mean, it's really, really big business. When you think about the wealth that's been generated from AI alone, I think it's probably about $1 trillion now, and it just hasn't even gotten started.
Hasn't started yet. Especially like Amazon. I was like, I see Amazon always has a 5G play right now, and AI. And then I went to the Mobile World Congress, And they had a whole AI section. I was like, why is AI here? Just like, oh, now I get it. Because it's like,
it's the new internet. Yeah, some people even call it the new electricity, right? It's just going
to
sort of.
And they say CES. The first I went to see is 2017. AI was like maybe like a little, like just like maybe like 10, 20 people working. Now it was a whole section, artificial intelligence, doors, computer vision stuff, like everything. And I'm so excited to go this next year to see what's going on, because I'm pretty sure they have a lot of stuff. So, all right, guys. So thanks again for coming in. Go to Dr. Han's website, to Matt's website as well. And thanks for joining and have a great afternoon.
Bye-bye. Thanks for having us on.
Thank you.
Take care, guys. Bye-bye.
This show is brought to you by Igla Communications at the Iglavator in Boca Raton, Florida.